Broadcasting live from beautiful, historic Marion, Ohio, it's Now with Scott Spears on WWGH 107.1 FM. Call Scott live on the air anytime at 740-383-9944. No topic is too big or too small. I'm your announcer, the man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. And now, here's your host, Scott Spears.
Thank you, man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. Scott Spears along with you here Thursday, August the 12th, 2021, 18 minutes past the hour. And we have got 2 hours loaded for you this morning. Local news about COVID-19. Now, next hour, let me touch on this very quickly. Next hour, in studio from 9:15 until 9:45, we are going to be joined by Paul Young. Now, Paul Young is the student of a Marion City School, or is the father of a Marion City School student, who has started a petition that Marion City Schools should not have to wear masks when school starts coming up on Monday, I believe, August the 16th. Now, Paul will be in to share his story along with the student, the 10-year-old student, who is affected by this. So that will be 9:15 to 9:45 next hour. Now, to be fair, at 9:45 next hour until 10 o'clock, we'll be joined via telephone by Marion City School Superintendent Dr. Ron Arusi to explain why this decision has been made and what his reaction is to the protests. And the I think the protest went on 2 days ago, as well as the petition, which is gaining a few signatures here in Marion. But to discuss the medical side of this, we're so glad for our guest here in hour number one. He is the Vice President of Medical Affairs at Marion General Hospital. He is Dr. Bernal Shaw. Dr. Shaw, how are you?
Good morning. How are you, Scott?
Doing well. Interesting times that maybe we thought wouldn't come back, but here we are.
Here we are. Yep.
Here we are. Dr. Shaw, I want to talk about Marion General Hospital. We're hearing reports, saw a news report on the evening news last night that Texas has set up tents for hospitals. They're running out of room. The same thing is happening in Florida. There are some reports from Ohio Health hospitals in other areas reaching capacity. Where are we here in Marion?
Yeah, no, thank you, Scott. We are seeing all of our hospitals, our own hospitals, Ohio Health facilities, as well as Ohio State Mount Carmel. Most health systems across the state of Ohio are at or beyond their capacity. Not actually because of COVID, but maybe as a downstream effect of COVID. We had slowed down elective surgeries, and we'd asked people to kind of hold off on coming into the offices and the hospitals, you know, a year ago. And since then, as we've gotten people vaccinated and people started opening things back up, we've got a lot of patients coming back in to get the care that they needed. And so the hospitals are busy. The hospitals are busy just taking care of patients and meeting their needs. And whether it's a heart attack or stroke or surgery or anything else, we're getting them taken care of. That keeps the house really busy. Now what we're seeing is this sort of, now it's the fourth wave, but it's the next surge of COVID numbers. And we're trying to be as best prepared as we can for what will likely be sort of another wave. Hopefully not as bad as November and December of last year, but a wave nonetheless. And we want to make sure we can accommodate as best we can to take care of all of those patients who have needs from us.
Now, typically before COVID, when the hospital was running normally and it was elective surgeries and heart attacks and strokes and things like that, what capacity would a hospital be running at?
Yeah, it's a great question, Scott. I would tell you that Marion in general, and in general, we tend to run at a fairly high capacity. I mean, we've learned how to put the right patients in the hospitals, get the right patients through surgery, and so we've tended to meet the gaps and the needs in the communities, and we've been doing that for years. So I would tell you that we've always run busy, but let me give you some sense of that. You know, in general, we would run at about 80, 90% capacity. Every now and again, we'd hit 95%, and we would, you know, juggle things to get people moving. These days, we are all running between 95 and 105%. You might ask yourself, how is that possible, of staffed capacity. So as we look at the number of nurses that are available to us or the number of Physicians aren't necessarily the bottleneck, but nursing staff and how we staff our beds, we're running it a little bit just beyond the capacity that we would like to see, and that's been more the norm than not in this last year.
So what does happen when you run it over 100%?
We have nurses that are looking to see how they can prioritize what they need to be able to do. We leverage a lot of other staff then to help support the care that needs to be done. Our goal and our mission is always to make sure patients are getting everything that they need, and care today is no different than it would be care a year or two ago or a year from now. It's always got to be top quality care. But sometimes you have to redistribute how you get that work done and who's doing it. So it requires a little more juggling, if you will, on our staff's part to get it done.
If I would walk into the hospital today with some illness, what difference would I notice as a patient?
Not much. It would just feel busy to you. You might have a few more people involved in your care than maybe we know that. Probably patients are always just used to seeing a lot of people coming and going from their room, so I think most patients would tell you that it feels probably business as usual to them.
Now, as far as surgeries, elective surgeries, now that this Delta variant has come about and pushed the capacity up above what it should be, are some of these being delayed, put off? Is there any thought being put into that?
We're keeping an eye on that. Right now, we know that the demand for surgeries and elective cases it's still really high, so we want to make sure we're meeting patients with what their needs are. So we're keeping an eye on it. We're keeping an eye on the Delta variant. We're keeping an eye on the numbers. We're looking at how it's impacting each of our care sites. And to the extent that the COVID numbers become enough of a driver of capacity, then we will start to have to do what we need to do to help, move some things around so that we can keep the access to care that we need.
We hear a lot about COVID numbers in the state, in the United States, and also in the city. But in the hospital, how many people are in the hospital with COVID since this Delta variant came about?
Great question. In the hospital, I'm looking at my notes here real quick. In Marion, I want to say we've had a total of... Marion cases have been about 8,800 cases since the beginning. Marion hospitalizations, I'm not finding the number right off the top of my head, but I want to say it's been a few hundred that we've had come through Marion General Hospital since all of this started.
Now, do most of that few hundred, do they have to stay, or do they just come in and get tested and go home? What's the nature of this Delta variant?
Yeah, now I would tell you that a couple things have changed with this Delta variant that we haven't seen before, and it's kind of an interesting set of dynamics that we're keeping an eye on. The first one is that oftentimes patients who are sick with the Delta variant, we're finding them to be of younger age groups. There's probably two reasons for that. The first reason is that our vaccination rate of patients over the age of 70 was really high in Marion County, and therefore those are folks that are not getting sick with Delta variant or really much of anything else, and so they're able to care for themselves at home and not come in the hospital. So who's making their way to the hospital now are younger patients. We're seeing averages now in the 30s for those age patients that end up being hospitalized. Still a decent number of them are ending up in the ICU, but most of them are able to recover and head home. Maybe because of their age, they're able to take advantage of that.
Has there been any advancement other than the vaccine in care for people with COVID that would allow them to go home?
We learned a lot during wave 2 and 3, which would have been sort of late summer and then the winter surge. We learned a lot. So there's the use of monoclonal antibodies, which have been really, really powerful. There's a couple of medications that we can use that can help to turn the virus around and help people recover from that. We've learned a lot about how to use oxygenation and be in the ICU and how to help support them. The good thing is I think from a treatment perspective, we've gotten more sophisticated, but the complications from COVID are they are what they are, and there's only so much you can do to prevent those things from happening. So we have gotten better at treating, but people are still going to be pretty sick with it. And those, if you talk to anyone who's had it in the past or is having it here currently, they feel pretty miserable. It's a pretty rough virus to get.
You know, this has become a big question, and it seems like doctors have varying opinions on this when you watch television or even visit your own doctor. I know that here in Marion, I was told that if you want to see a pulmonologist, it's about a 3-month wait at this particular point. And this is because of what they call long-haul COVID. Once you have it, you have lasting effects. Have we found that these lasting effects with breathing go on forever, or will they cure themselves one day?
Eventually, those symptoms improve. The long-haul syndrome is a small percentage of patients, but those that get it, they're going to have it for months. But they will improve. They will recover. And what we're finding is that most of those patients probably don't need pulmonology per se. That's one of the things that we learned. Most of our primary care physicians in the community know how to diagnose long haul, and they know how to manage it. It's only when there are further complications, typically involving the lungs, where we would want to get them in to see a pulmonologist. So definitely have confidence in your primary care providers and how they might be able to help support you. And then if the need arises, they would certainly get you into pulmonology.
You know, it's very interesting because it's kind of complex, because we all hear these stories now with so many people getting them. If you've never had a breathing problem in your life and all of a sudden you're over the COVID, but you've got a breathing problem, you go to the hospital, the ER, or the emergency room, maybe you think you're having a heart attack or something, come to find out it's the long-haul COVID. What is causing that breathing issue that you heretofore had not had?
That's a really great question. There's a couple of different theories that are out there. The first one, and this one's probably the most likely to be correct, just because it's the simplest from a medical or physiological perspective. A lot of it comes from the inflammatory processes that occur in the body when you're affected with a virus, or in some cases bacteria as well. But when you are affected with these kinds of viruses, your body mounts a very significant viral sort of inflammatory response. That response then has other effects that it can have in our bodies, such as, I'll say, making the lungs work a little harder than they normally do, or creating extra swelling in areas that then make it a little harder to breathe than we would like. And then the second part of that is that there's a change in the way our body clots after COVID. It makes it a little, we clot things off a little bit easier, so our blood gets a little bit thicker, things don't move like they're supposed to, and so we are finding that somewhere in there, those are the reasons why some patients end up having long-haul syndrome. And then over the course of months, your body does finally recover, all those inflammatory processes decline over time, and then people start feeling better, and then they can eventually come back to feeling good.
Time is an issue with people, and it's interesting, but I now that we've been in this for nearly 2 years, I've heard from people that said it took a year to get that to go away, and you're not really treated with medicine, I guess, unless you need something, so you're not, having serious breathing problems. But can it take that long?
Yeah, it can. And it really does. There's so many other factors that go into that, but sometimes we may have underlying lung capacity issues that maybe we've never taxed, so we don't know. And then once you get something like COVID and you get into the long-haul syndrome, maybe now you figure that out, and that's when you're going to maybe take longer to recover than if you didn't. So lots of other variables that go into that, but it can last a while. People are pretty miserable for a little while. They're miserable anyway, and then it could go on for months, could go on for a year. It's a lot more rare, but it certainly could.
But there's good news at the end of that. That in most cases, it does go away.
It does go away.
That's good news.
Yeah.
When we're looking at this Delta variant in Marion County right now, there are two things we know for sure. Right now, the numbers that we have, 37%, a little over 37% of people in Marion County are vaccinated. I believe a little over 40% have had their first shot. And we also know that school's about to start. On Monday, I believe Marion City School starts. Now, with younger people becoming ill with this, and we have a 37% fully vaccinated rate, how will this get better? And we also have been told now by Dr. Vanderhoff in Columbus that this is more contagious than the common cold.
It is, yeah. No, it's a great set of questions, so we'll take it kind of a piece at a time. The first thing is, what we've learned internationally and nationally, the most preventive thing things we can do, the most effective preventive thing you can do is get the vaccine. What we know is that right now, of our hospitalizations across the state of Ohio, even in Marion County, 98%+ of those patients that are sick and being admitted were not vaccinated. So we know that the number one most effective thing that we can do to help curb the pandemic and really turn this thing around is going to be getting more of our folks vaccinated than are today. The second thing we know is that wearing masks works. We know that internationally and nationally, there's not a question in anybody's mind as to whether masks are effective in preventing the spread of the infection. And so wearing masks and keeping some degree of distance is an important factor that we can take in helping to reduce the spread. And then when you look at the younger populations, as I mentioned, now that we've had older populations vaccinated, our younger populations are not, there's a subset of our younger populations under 13 years of age that have not been vaccinated yet. That group is now likely the most susceptible to being exposed to the virus, and now we're seeing a lot of cases where kids are getting sick with the Delta variant, actually, not with the first round or the first part of the pandemic. Kids were somehow immune to that one better, but with the Delta variant, we're seeing a lot more kids ending up in the hospitals and in the ICUs, and that is scarier to me. I have children myself, and so it's the thing that makes me nervous for them. So the schools taking precautions, employers taking precautions, even in some cases now employers are saying, you know, we want our folks to create a safe environment, so we want them to be vaccinated. That is really the only way we're going to turn the pandemic around.
As we start school next week, we have 5 school districts in this county, and to my knowledge, as of this point, only one, Marion City, has mandated masks. There will be 4 districts going back to school next week that will have no mask policy. With an illness right now that's on the rise, more contagious than the common cold, in a community with only 37% fully vaccinated, and a hospital operating sometimes at 105%, what could this look like?
It could get worse. It could get worse. And so I would tell you that I think if you look at the virulence, that's a way of describing just how easily these viruses can spread, especially with the Delta variant being far more virulent than even the previous versions. Kids becoming exposed to the virus means that they'll take it home as well. So I think what we're going to see, in the absence of masks, in the absence of social distancing, and in the absence of fully vaccinating as many people as we can, it will continue to spread, and people will continue to get sick. Many will be able to stay home and just sort of ride it out. Many, unfortunately, others will not be able to, and they'll end up back in the hospital or in the hospital and require ICU care and medications and everything else. So to the extent that we as a community want to get a handle on this, it comes out of vaccination, masking, and distance. And those steps have to be taken.
We have had the health department offer $100 at vaccination clinics. We have had the governor offer $1 million 5 times. The vaccine is absolutely free anywhere you go. You can get it without standing in any lines at this point. People know it's there. School's coming back in. We're being told the Delta variant is here. 37% in Marion County. How do you make that happen?
I would love to see folks asking their doctors, talking to people, trying to understand what barriers they might still need to overcome to get the vaccine, because there are no other barriers. There's no timeliness barriers. There's no, as you said, there's no lines anywhere now. You can literally call and come in any day you want. The couple things I'll mention, Scott, even a first dose of any of our main vaccine categories, Moderna or Pfizer, even the first dose is 70% effective at preventing sickness and death from COVID. A second dose gets you to 95, 97, 98%, depending on what studies you read, effectiveness against severe infection and death. I would encourage folks, if you have reservations about it, if you're not sure, if you're on the fence, well, if I could just get people to go get it, I would say go get it. If you're on the fence, there's only one way to end the pandemic, and this is the only way. But the other thing I would say is, if you're really against it, I think it's a chance for you to talk with people who are knowledgeable in the field, your doctor, the folks that you trust in the healthcare business, talking with public health. Our only interest is in serving the community and keeping our community safe. I can only ask everybody to recognize the three things that will end the pandemic. Well, one will end the pandemic, the other two will help us overcome, and that is vaccine, masks, and distance. And we just need people to help.
Dr. Shaw, one of the things that has confused a lot of people since the beginning of this, no matter what the politicians are saying or the people on television, normally something medical, and we would say this is medical, even the flu shot, people would call their doctor. If they had reservations, they'd call their primary care physician and they'd say, should I do this? And usually, based upon that information, they would do it. People don't seem to be calling their doctors on this one. Why is that?
Well, Scott, can I be honest? I'll be honest. I think I have two answers for that. The first one is, I think this is a very emotional topic for people. It's we're a divided community. Many folks are in a stance that is not founded in science, but rather founded in fear or concern or worry or conspiracies or all the other things that might be out there. And so they are probably not going to like the answer they get from their physician, which would be, yes, I need you to get this. So I think a lot of people are avoiding asking their doctor because I think they know what answer they're going to get, and that isn't going to sit well with them. So I think the emotionality of this, what I've learned in my career is that you can't always meet emotion with data. So I can throw all the data out there that I want, but at the end of the day, we got to meet you where you are. And if you're emotional about it, if you are concerned about it, if you're fearful of it, we got to start there. You got to meet your emotion with emotion and help you feel better, and then we can talk the data, then we can talk the science, then we can talk about the facts. But right now, we got to help people get over that emotional hurdle. Does that make sense?
It does, and but it's the most confusing thing in the world because all these elective medical procedures, I mean, that's all based on doctors' opinions. People take those. On this one, totally different.
You're right. You got it. That's really well said. I mean, think about how many times people have asked their doctor about whether they should get their knee replaced or not. Sometimes we say we shouldn't. Sometimes we say we should. But you're having a discussion about it, and you have someone you trust who can help you make that decision. I can't think of a single organization worldwide, nationally, or locally that has not come out with a very strong stance that the only way to end the pandemic is with the vaccine. But yet, we have people who are afraid to ask the question.
37% are fully vaccinated in Marion, 40%, little 40% have had the first shot at this point. Those are the numbers we still have. Now, this is for the people who have been vaccinated. They've been told that this was going to help them. They've been told they don't have to wear the mask anymore if they do that. And now they're being told to wear their mask. 2% of that population is still ending up in the hospital. If I have the vaccine, what should I do?
Yeah, no, great. But one thing I want to clarify with that, Scott, I would not say that 2% of those that have been vaccinated are ending up in the hospital, because it's much, much smaller than that.
Okay.
2% of those in the hospital may have been vaccinated. Does that make sense?
Okay. So 2%.
Yeah. No. Thank you for saying that, though, because it allows me to make sure that people know that. If you've been vaccinated, your likelihood of being hospitalized is very, very low, and your risk of death is almost zero. So that's really what the vaccine does to protect people. But what it doesn't do is it can't prevent you from getting the virus. It just helps you mount a response that doesn't allow it to make you very sick. And so the reason for the masks then is that prior to the Delta variant, we felt very comfortable that once you've been vaccinated, even if you were to not wear a mask, you were not going to get sick, and we maybe didn't feel like we needed to worry about anybody else. Now the Delta variant is out there, and while you've been vaccinated, you can still get the Delta variant. You may get sick, you might not even get sick with it, but that is why we're wearing the masks now, because we want to, in some ways, help to protect those, maybe children, in fact, who are not vaccinated.
Let's say I'm somebody with a pre-existing condition, or I'm an elderly person who we thought were the risk categories before, but I've been vaccinated. I'm vaccinated, fully vaccinated. I go to the grocery store, I don't wear a mask, and I get COVID, the Delta variant. What am I likely to feel like?
In most cases, nothing. In some cases, a cold-like syndrome, and in rare cases, sick enough that you might need to be seen by your doctor or in the emergency department. And then even more rare would be hospitalization and potentially ICU. In fact, I don't know that we've had any in the ICU, but, you know, certainly it's a very small percentage of those that have been vaccinated, even with the Delta variant, that end up in the hospital sick.
Those few that do end up in the hospital sick, what is happening there?
The virus is still overpowering them, and their immune response wasn't as strong as it could have been, and so that happens. I mean, but you know, each of our bodies are different in how we respond to anything, and so the vaccine has been found to be extremely effective, but in some people, the immune response that they create to it might not be as strong as other people. Most people do, some people don't. Those that don't can still be exposed to the virus and still get sick with it. For most people, it's been flu-like, cold-like symptoms, and they hang out at home, and they let it ride out, and they're okay. But very rarely do they end up in the hospital.
When in Marion, our neck of the woods here, of the people who have had to be hospitalized, do you know of any that were vaccinated?
Right now, Marion's numbers would suggest that we are 99%, maybe 99-plus percent of those being admitted that were not vaccinated. We may have had, I can only think of potentially two cases where they were vaccinated and ended up in the hospital, but all the rest have were not vaccinated.
Were these two people, without getting too deep into this, were they older? Did they have underlying conditions? Was there a reason that maybe this happened?
I don't know that I remember that. I don't know that I know the specifics behind it, but I can tell you that what we're learning at the state level and certainly nationally, those that might still end up sick was probably because their body did not mount the same level of immune response as, you know, 95% of everybody else. And in that sense, their body still became a bit sicker with the virus, even with the vaccine. And it's a rare instance, but it can happen.
Did those people go home?
Yeah.
Okay. When we look at this from a broad perspective, because so many people have had it now, and some people had it asymptomatic. Now, have we learned any more about having COVID? Is there protection built up there in any way?
Yeah, once you've had the virus, that you're certain your body definitely mounted a response to it. So most people will build some degree of immunity from having had the infection itself. If you're asymptomatic, you won't actually know. So you may not have even known that you had it, nor did you really mount much of a response. So you're probably not immune in that case. If you did get sick and it ended up being COVID positive and you were sick, but you were able to stay home, at least you knew that you got the virus, your body mounted a response, and now you do have some immunity to that. What we are waiting to see data on is how long that immunity lasts. So in the case of an actual infection, how good is that immune response versus in the vaccination status, how good is the immune response? We're seeing about a 95, 96% conversion rate from the vaccine. From the infection itself, data is fluctuating, but we're waiting to see some of that data from the CDC to say what might that look like. Is it different? Is it the same? Is it better? Is it not as good? But in the end, if you get it, you are definitely mounting a response.
If you had COVID and survived it, and then you went and got the vaccine as well, is that better than just getting the vaccine?
Better, I don't know if it's better, but it is safe. So even if you've been sick before with COVID and you've recovered fully, getting the vaccine will protect you. We believe protect you better, but we're waiting for data to find that out, but certainly would protect you better. Than just relying on having been sick before as your only immune response. Is it better to have had it and gotten the vaccine over just getting the vaccine? Probably not. It's probably still going to be the 95, 96% effective.
When we look at the hospital itself, for people's peace of mind, because there are only so many employees, if we get to a place like we got last December with the contagiousness of this and our vaccination rate in Marion, that certainly, I think, would be a possibility. If that happens, what happens at the hospital? What's the plan B?
We are very fortunate at our facilities. We have very committed and dedicated staff. We've done it before. We'll do it again. Our teams will rally up. Our physicians, our nurses, our therapists, our pharmacists, all of our teams will rally in, and they will do what is necessary to take care of the community. We always have. We always will. So in that way, we're very fortunate. Now that the majority of our associates are vaccinated, and we're moving towards getting all of them vaccinated, they're also safer. They are safer themselves, and they're creating the safest possible environment for patients who are coming in as well. So I have confidence in our physicians and our clinical teams. They're the best of the best, and they will always do what is necessary to care for the community. So I am confident that they will rally and do what's necessary.
Did you think this would happen when the politicians came in back in June and lifted all the restrictions and vaccinations were out there and they were free and here we go? Did you believe we would be here in August?
I think we were all fearful that with vaccination rates being under 50% nationally, that we run the risk of seeing another surge. Had we managed to get our vaccination rates high enough, we could have prevented this next surge.
For those people who do not have the vaccine, which right now is the majority of Marion, if you go into the grocery store, you can go in anywhere now. If you go in somewhere without a mask, with this Delta variant being more contagious than the common cold, how risky is this?
More risky than it was before we had the vaccine. What we have to assume is that if you look from a population health perspective, when you walk into any grocery store, any restaurant, anywhere you might go in Marion, you can only count on a quarter of the folks in the room having been vaccinated. Three quarters of the room has not. And the three quarters of the room that have not, and once our kids start going back to school, those kids are going to be exposed to the virus as well. That 75% poses a risk, more so than it's ever been, because the Delta variant is so contagious, which was not as much the case, you know, back last fall. So I do think it's concerning.
When we talk about contagious, we've talked about so many things: 6 feet apart, hand sanitizer, masks, all that sort of thing. When we talk about more contagious, what does that mean? Do we need to stand further apart? Do we need to mask up more often? More contagious, what does that mean?
Yeah, no, great question. But that usually gives you a sense of how likely are you to get sick if you're exposed. For example, if you walked into a family member's room who has the common cold, you might get sick. You have, you know, a decent chance of getting sick, but you might not. But if you've ever seen how chickenpox works, if somebody in the room has chickenpox and you walk in the room, there's a pretty good chance you're going to get chickenpox because that virus is so contagious. And that's where we are with this. So if you wear a mask, you just need to wear a mask and you're safe and you're keeping others safe. If you keep 6 feet of distance, you're safe, you're keeping other people safe.
Masks have become the issue of our time. And certainly they're a gigantic issue right now, leading to protests, leading to petitions, leading to schools taking a lot of flack for doing it, as well as stores. People who have mandated this shot, hospitals who have, are taking a lot of heat about this. Okay, what is the story on the masks? Does it help me if I wear it and other people don't? What's the story behind the mask?
Yeah, so actually we have done a number of studies at looking at the effectiveness of masks. So here's what I can tell you. If you wear a mask, you protect yourself pretty well. If you wear a mask and maybe you have the virus, you protect those around you very well. If both are wearing masks, those who may have the virus and those who don't have the virus, then it is extremely effective in preventing the spread of the virus.
Why are people confused by this? They will say there's no information that says that. They'll say there's conflicting information. What is the confusion there?
I think it goes back to what I said earlier, Scott. I think this is more of an emotional issue than it is a data-driven issue. I think people are feeling scared, anxious, fearful, worried, angry, bitter, just pick whatever word you want. Those are all emotions. People are feeling emotional about the pandemic. They're feeling emotional about the virus. Maybe they don't want to believe that it's real. Maybe they don't want to believe that these are steps that we have to take. Whatever it might be, there's a lot of emotionality out there, and that's what creates confusion. No amount of data, no amount of facts are going to overcome what needs to start with a heart-to-heart conversation about how emotional this feels to people. Does that make sense?
It does, and it's... But if I have an anxiety disorder, if I have a breathing issue prior to COVID, and I just can't wear this mask for whatever reason, what do I do?
Get the vaccine. If you can't wear a mask, and with the Delta variant being as contagious as it is, I don't want you to get sick and end up in the hospital. So the only thing for sure that I would want you to consider is get the vaccine to protect yourself.
If I have the vaccine, am I safe at this point with the way the numbers are rising and, again, the vaccination rate in Marion? Is it good for me to go to the grocery store? Is it good for me to go out and have dinner with my friends? Is it good for me to go to the gym, daily lifestyle?
It is safer for you to do every one of those things once you've been vaccinated. It is just safer, to the tune of 90% safer, 95% safer, to be out and about, going to the grocery store, going to restaurants, going to the gym, being in other folks' homes, things like that. You are safer because of the vaccine. The Delta variant, though, is real, and if you're going to be around people who might not be vaccinated, that's where the masks become an opportunity.
This is the first variant we have seen. Is it possible that we're going to see other variants?
There are. So we're not out of the woods on this virus. So viruses are smart. They figure out how to become better at getting out into more and more people. That's just what they do. And so viruses will continue to evolve to help them propagate. And so the only way to really stop it is if you can shut it down. And the only way to shut it down is if there's something called herd immunity. But if enough people in the community are immune, either through vaccination or because they've been sick already with it, that is the only thing that will ever get us to the point where the virus will stop morphing into something different and then variants will slow down or disappear. But as long as we are at the vaccination rates that we're seeing, we're going to see more variants.
In the flu pandemic of 1918, it did get better. Why is this taking longer?
We didn't have vaccines back in 1918, and I think that was a big driver of how many people died. The virus is actually, once the host dies, the virus goes with them. So I think in some ways it was only through just the sheer number of people who passed from the virus then, the Spanish flu at that time, that ultimately the virus went with them, and therefore the numbers went down and we finally were able to overcome. I would say that because we have mitigating factors, because we have things that we can do to slow things down, but we are not vaccinated at 70% or more of our populations, it's sticking around longer. And people are spreading it to each other back and forth, and we're not going to get a handle on it until enough people have gotten sick with it and then built some immunity, or enough people get vaccinated that we're able to help curb the spread of the infections.
A lot of people right now, because of the start of school on Monday, because of the change in the weather that will happen in a four-season area like Ohio, because of the numbers rising, because of the contagiousness of the Delta variant, because of the vaccination rate not seemingly moving a whole lot here in Marion County, a lot of people feel we're on the edge of a waterfall here. What keeps you up at night? What are you worried about right now?
Well, a lot. So I worry a lot about these things. What I worry about the most right now is protecting our healthcare workers, our physicians, our nurses, our staff, as best that we can. They're our only last line of defense in taking care of people who get sick. So I worry, I stay up at night worrying about our teams, our staff, our physicians, and our nurses. I want people to be as safe as possible, and there's only one way to help get people to be safe. And so it keeps me up at night that people are still so apprehensive about the vaccine or still so apprehensive about letting us protect our communities that I lay around and I worry about that. And I think to the extent that our vaccination rates remain low, we're going to see other variants come through. And if the Delta variant is any harbinger of things to come, they will likely get more and more contagious as they become smarter. And so I really worry about being able to put an end to it. And I just, we just as a community have to decide to come together and find a way to put an end to it.
Is there ever a fear that we will get a variant of COVID where the vaccination will not work?
There's always that possibility. That is not what we're seeing. Our human bodies are so smart that once we've given ourselves the armamentarium to know what to fight against, which is what the vaccine does, or if you get sick with it, that even variants, as soon as your body sees it, will know how to mount a response. So while it is a theoretical possibility, it's not likely how our bodies will respond. We know how to take care of it. Our bodies are smart.
Dr. Shaw, talking to the community right now in our last 4 minutes here, what would you say to them? You're talking to a community right now, 37% fully vaccinated, 40% with one shot. You could walk into Kroger, Meijer, Marion Public Health, a lot of places today and get this shot for absolutely nothing. What's going to convince them? What can you say to them?
That's a tough one. I don't know that there's anything I can ever say that will convince them, except to say, number one, I understand how afraid people are of the virus, of getting sick, of the vaccine, of having to live this life that I don't think any of us thought we were going to have to live back in 2019. And I get that, and I understand that. I wish, too, that we were not where we are. That being said, I would say there's only three things that we can do to prevent the spread and or to completely get rid of this pandemic, and that is vaccinations, masks, and distance. Ask your doctor. You may not like the answer, but talk with your doctor. Find out what you're worried about and let your doctor help you figure out how you can overcome that. Try to dispel fear with information. But you got to get over that emotionality first, and I think working with our healthcare community is our best way to help meet people where they are.
I heard a conversation in a grocery store last night amongst the employees, and it's being said now, strongly recommend, no mandates, but strongly recommend that even if you're vaccinated, you wear the mask. And this is going on in schools and daycares and all over the place, restaurants. Should I wear the mask if I'm vaccinated and I'm out in the public working?
Yeah, I would tell you that the way that you can help prevent, even though you might not be sick with the Delta variant or anything else, the best way that we can help prevent the spread of the virus is if we're all willing to continue wearing masks for some duration of time that allows the numbers to go back down and eventually let enough people get vaccinated that then we can end the pandemic.
Mm. And the final wrap-up question here is, we've been seeing so many jobs all over the place. People need help. People need work. Are we seeing that in the medical field because of COVID?
Yeah. We're seeing that our teams are exhausted. We are seeing that our providers have burnt out. What we have been through is like nothing else we would have ever seen, and burnout was already high. So we are seeing that people are exhausted. There are tremendous opportunities in healthcare. So if people are considering whether they might be able to get their foot into healthcare, maybe give back to their community in some way, maybe they've benefited from an excellent healthcare system that supports them, go be a PSA, which is a nursing assistant in one of our units, and learn the trade, and then go back to nursing school, go to med school, go be a pharmacist. There's so many ways that people can go and use their education to go and give back to their community. There's a huge need. I would encourage people to consider it.
Dr. Myrnal Shaw, Vice President of Medical Affairs at Marion General Hospital. Dr. Shaw, this has been absolutely fascinating, and I know it's a busy time, but I hope you find the time to come back with us as this progresses over the next few months.
Happy to help you, Scott. Thank you for giving us an opportunity to share.
Thank you, Dr. Shaw. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye.
All right, Dr. Shaw, there you go. There's your information. We're going to be back in about 15 minutes with the mask mandate questions that are facing Marion City Schools.
Oh, Tony, you drink when you want to drink. You want to
Thank
drink
you.
At 10 in the morning,
Thank you
drink.
I deserve it. I'm at the age now. I ain't going to stop it. Stop to save my life.